This is How Success Happens, where the staff of Entrepreneur chats with innovators, writers, artists, chefs, and a range of other unique personalities to better understand the traits that make excellence possible.
Nobody in Silicon Valley thinks it's actually them. They think everybody else is like this.
One of my regrets actually now, we should have pulled the plug sooner.
It's amazing when the universe sees you commit, how all of a sudden all these resources start to come together.
Thanks for joining us. And now, How Success Happens.
For over 25 years, Tom Papa has been standing up on an empty stage with only a stool and a microphone. His job? To make a room full of strangers laugh their butts off. For a stand-up comedian, every performance is a risk, and to find success for over two decades is an incredible accomplishment. For Papa, however, this wasn't enough. Besides being head writer and regular performer for Live From Here, the newest incarnation of the legendary radio show A Prairie Home Companion, and releasing his first book, Your Dad Stole My Rake, this summer, Papa premiered his own Food Network TV series, Baked, this September. On the show, Papa visits iconic bakeries around the country to talk to the bakers and learn from their wisdom. How did he pivot from nightclub performer to baking authority? We'll find out, but first, a word from our sponsors. Payroll and benefits are hard, especially for small businesses. You don't have the time to be an expert in things like taxes and regulations, and old-school payroll providers just aren't built for the way you work today. Gusto is making payroll, benefits, and HR easy for small businesses. Modern technology does the heavy lifting, so it's easy to get things right. PC Mag and Fit Small Business have called Gusto the best payroll for small businesses. Gusto makes payroll a breeze. In fact, 9 out of 10 users say Gusto is easier to use than other payroll solutions. Gusto saves you time. 72% of customers spend less than 5 minutes to run payroll. Gusto is reliable. 4 out of 5 customers actually reduce payroll errors after switching to Gusto. Don't believe it? Just Google them. People love Gusto. How often do you actually love your payroll provider? Most small businesses don't have an HR expert, but you don't need one to use Gusto. With great software and great service, you can focus on your business, not payroll and paperwork. You no longer have to be a big company to get great technology, great benefits, and great service for your team. To help support the show, Gusto is offering our listeners an exclusive, limited-time deal. Sign up today and you'll get 3 months free once you run your first payroll. Just go to gusto.com/HSH. Again, that's gusto.com/HSH. And now for our next sponsor. Now that the NFL season is here, I look forward to Sundays to wind down before starting another busy work week. Of course, my friends are always trying to get me to bet on games. The truth is, I don't know who's going to win, but if you think you know, you got to check out MyBookie. MyBookie has been in business for years, and they have great customer service. Who you are betting on is just as important as who you're betting with. MyBookie has in-game live betting, the most rewarding player perks in the business, and for fantasy players, you can even bet the over-under on how many fantasy points a player will score each game. Join now and MyBookie will match your deposit dollar for dollar. Here's how you do that. Visit MyBookie today. Then, when you're creating your account, use the promo code SUCCESS to activate the offer. Again, that's MyBookie, and use the promo code SUCCESS, SUCCESS. To get a dollar-for-dollar match on your deposit. MyBookie. You play, you win, you get paid. So how did this transition happen, going from stand-up comedian to Food Network host?
Good question. It is actually the one project in my career that I did not plan. Or there was no reason to do anything except bake bread. I was just learning how to bake bread. I had a friend of mine explained what a sourdough starter was to me, this living culture of yeast, which is how bread was made thousands of years ago, and that you just put flour and water in a bowl, and this wild yeast around your head that's floating around us all the time goes in and eats it, and you capture it and it becomes this living organism. And that just sounded bizarre to me. And I told my family the story, and my daughter for Christmas gave me a sourdough starter that she got going secretly in the kitchen. And I just started baking bread. I made amazing smelling, great bread. Some of it wasn't so great, but we were just fascinated that this was working. And I never had a hobby before, and it just kind of took off. I couldn't stop doing it. I just kept getting better at it. I started researching it. When I would travel around doing stand-up, I would go visit bakers, see what kind of flour they were using, and I got pretty good at it. And I started baking more bread than my family could eat, and I just fell in love with it. And then on social media, it caught on. I had done some podcasts. I talked about it publicly, different places. The New York Times did an article on people with their sourdough starters, and Sam Sifton included me in that article.
Oh, wow.
That was kind of like the first, like, weird, like, my friends from New York were calling me in L.A., like, why are you in the food section? What are you doing out there? And it just caught on, and then the Food Network caught wind of it, and now we have this show. And like I said, this was not... It really was one of those things where, you know, I've desperately tried to get on television before and written scripts and pitched and really pushed hard. And this was, if I had a show or not, I would be doing exactly the same thing. You know, I would be going around preaching the love of bread and that we should all be eating it. And I would be visiting bakers. And it is just my life. And I think the passion, I think, is the thing that kind of caught on. And that's why it's on TV.
Were you pretty good out the gate in terms of baking? Do you have a cooking background? Did you like to cook?
I like to cook. I cook a lot, but I don't bake a lot. My wife was the baker. And I'm not good with really precise baking. Bread is somewhere in the middle. There's a little bit more art to it than there is science, or at least equal parts. Where you can screw up, you can do it by feel, you can kind of just start to learn it, and it seems more like cooking to me than baking a cake, you know, where you blow one little measurement and the whole thing comes crumbling down. I don't have that kind of precision. So yeah, it was a natural fit. And I also started to think, why are we the first generation? Bread's been around for thousands of years. People
right.
have been eating it. Why is it when we show up, they say it's bad for you? It doesn't make any
sense. Of all times in human history to show up, we have to be here when bread is bad.
Yeah, and you're supposed to deny yourself and not go to bakeries and not do this stuff. I was like, well, something's wrong.
And every culture has their bread.
Everybody. And I realized the stuff that we were eating has not been bread. We're eating this concoction of bread-like substance that has 30 ingredients in it. When I make my bread, it's flour, water, salt, and yeast. That's what bread is. This other thing is not really bread. So when people have gluten problems and weight problems and all this, there's sugars in those, there's chemicals in those, there's this reaction that people are having. It's not bread. So once I learned that, I was like, this show is going to be a celebration, and we should be part of the human race, and we should be enjoying ourselves. And that's what I want the whole thing to be.
You said that you had been going to different bakeries as you had been touring doing stand-up.
Yeah.
Throughout your career, or?
No, just since I started baking bread, like 3-4 years ago.
But while you were traveling doing stand-up, did you make a point to, if not check out bakeries, go to local spots, local food places that you were, like, did you have interest in that? Or did you prefer,
well,
more in general, staying by the hotel, just...
As a comedian, when you're on the road, there's very few things that I try and replicate what you're doing at home as much as possible. You just, like, it's the routine, you know? When I'm on the road, I need to write, I need to do my show that night, and I need to eat.
Right.
Those are the main things. And work out, if I'm motivated. And, so you're always looking for, the whole thing is, where are we going to eat? What's next to eat? How are we going to eat breakfast? The timing of when you're going to eat is a huge thing for a comedian.
Right.
It's like, all right, if I sleep in late, and then I have breakfast at like 11, and then I'm going to have lunch around 2, then the show's at 7. How's this going to work? It's a constant puzzle. And then do we eat late night? Do we not? So you're constantly
Is this the royal we, by the way, or is this you and other comedians?
This is me and whoever. Yeah, all comedians. All comedians do this.
Gotcha.
And when it's me on the road, it's me and my opening act. Where are we going to eat? What's all right. That's the whole discussion. So now it's given it a little more focus.
Right.
It's like, all right, this place, the greatest bakeries in every community are run by people who really care and are super passionate about it. That's why they can get up at 2 o'clock in the morning and fill a case filled with treats. So when we just stroll in on our way to work, it just happens to be there.
Right.
These people are working very hard and they're really into it and they're really dedicated and their ingredients are going to be great. So when you take the time to seek out the good ones, the payoff is wonderful because it's so much better than just going and getting a crappy cup of muffler coffee and a bad roll. If you go to these places, your day will be remarkably better.
Now, bakeries with personalities, I think the kind that you're talking about, unfortunately, like a lot of things these days, they're a dying breed. Like I was saying, here in New York, I live uptown, and there was a famous bakery called Glazer's,
yeah,
which opened like literally in 1890, something like that. And it just closed this summer.
I know. I was just thinking about that. Like, I was actually trying to write about that. I'm tired of living at the end of everything.
Right.
Everything. It's like there were great bakeries. There were great delis. We used to have animals here. We used to have winters. We used to have all this stuff. Like, anytime I watch anything with my children, any kind of documentary about beautiful bears or whatever, it's always you just hold on to the edge of the couch and wait for, and then humans ruined it all. Oh, it's so exhausting. But I do think things may not return the way that they have, but bakeries are, there's a resurgence. When I travel around for this show, like I went to Detroit, and no city has been more down on its luck than Detroit. And it's having a resurgence. People are coming back. And bakeries and cool restaurants are the thing that you notice first. You have to feed these people, and there's creative people that really care about doing it well. And even though that place closed, you know, after all that time, there's a whole bunch of places, I'm sure, in your neighborhood that you never saw before. All of a sudden, some kid wants to make the best coffee that he possibly can, and he found a connection with this African bean, and he's doing it. You know, I think there's almost a fight against everything rushing like this roaring river, and people are doing things a little more slowly.
You can't rush baking.
You can't rush baking. Good point. You can't. When I make the sourdough, it's literally the timing of it is always in my head. It's about a 3-day process from when I take the sourdough starter out of the fridge and feed it to when I actually get bread and give it to my family. It's about 3 days. So I've got to kind of time it and stuff. And any time you try and rush it at any stage, it's going to fail.
So what is that process? You said feed it.
You take your sourdough starter, which looks like this goo that's sitting in your refrigerator.
Do you ever watch that show Succession?
No, but people have told me about it.
Yeah. Someone gifts.
yeah, people tell me about it. And you take it out and you take a tablespoon of it and you put it in a bowl. And then you have to feed it. It's yeast. So you have to feed it flour and water, equal parts, and it starts eating it. And you'll notice in the bowl, that mixture that you put in there is starting to bubble, starting to aerate, because the yeast is eating it and excreting gas, and it's starting to bubble. And you want to feed it enough times where it's so filled with bubbles that it's super light and super active. The thing is really eating and digesting and poofing out these this little air, and that when it gets to that point, then you put it into a big bulk of dough and water and salt, and now you're making the actual, big bulk of flour, water, and salt, and now it's starting to make bread dough.
Right?
And then once that dough is gone for about 6 hours and you stretch it and fold it or knead it, then you shape it into these two big loaves of bread, put them in baskets, let them proof, and then you're baking bread.
And then you bake the bread.
Yeah. It's a long process, and you really can't rush it. And whenever I'm writing, Whenever I'm home writing with enough time to bake bread, I know I'm in a good place. Like, I'm off the road for a bit. I'm like, okay.
I can bread time.
Yeah, yeah. When I come in and I'm like only there for a day or two and I got to split, go do another show, it's an indicator of my unhappiness. Not that I'm unhappy going on the road, but I've been on the road hard for the last year, so I'm craving, I just want to bake bread and write.
I had read an interesting quote that you said, comparing bakers with comedians, stand-up comics in particular, talking about the idea that for both of those careers, you have to take a leap and say, this might not work out.
Yeah, when you're actually making it, when you're actually doing it, the career as well. I mean, it's an odd, they're both similar in the process of doing it. It's a very, even a master is going to fail once in a while, and you have to take risks and make changes if you're going to do something better or a different variation of what you're doing. And just like a comedian going up and trying new material, which I did last night, and like half of it worked and half of it didn't. And, you know, you have to be humble. The same thing when you're baking. It's like, all right, if I want to try making pumpernickel now, I know I'm going to mess up for a while. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, we don't like to fail. And you both careers, you kind of, both practices, you have to be willing to. And it's humbling, and it's good, and you should be okay, because that makes you go further. You have to be allow yourself to mess up.
So sort of in the same way that, you know, you can be a baker who's perfected this particular kind of loaf, you could be a comedian who, you have your go-to jokes that you know that have been serving you well for however long amount of time, and you could always go back to that well, but you still want to try something new.
Yeah, and it's going to be uncomfortable, and you have to do it. I could kill every night. I could go up. I have, you know, I've recorded 4 or 5 hours of material already, and I can pull any of that out on any night.
You know it works.
And yeah, I'm going to get through it. But to talk about why people who aren't, why people blame the moon for... their day going wrong.
Right.
That's a new concept. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. And then both careers, this is the practice, but then as careers, you have to be willing to say, okay, so I'm going to actually try and pay my rent and raise a family off of this practice. Mm-hmm. That's a big jump, you know, to say, I'm going to go tell jokes for a living, or I'm going to go make muffins. That's how I'm going to put my kids through school.
Yeah.
I'm making muffins, you know. But... and I can't speak completely for the baker side of it, but for the comedian side of it, it wasn't a choice. I just loved it so much that once I found out you could make a living at it, that just something clicked in my head, and then it pulled me there. I never like said, I'm going to really go and be a comedian. I just, from the time I was a kid, was like, oh yeah, well, let's go do that. And then the momentum just pulled me. And I think it's, and you know, I know this baker in LA who is really the top, like, and he distributes, it's called Bub and Grandma's, and he has this great business and it's growing like crazy, and he was in advertising, and then he started baking bread, and it pulled him into it, and then he got to the point where he's like, oh, I guess this is what I'm gonna do now.
Yeah.
And then he just did it. But both come from a love of what you're doing, so yeah, they're similar.
When did you start? When was the first time you did stand-up? How old were you?
I was in 1993, on June 12th, 1993.
You remember?
Yeah. Because I was, I had to bring a couple friends to sit in the audience at the New York Comedy Club. And I remember calling the Village Voice. I saw it in the Village Voice. It's when it existed and you had the paper.
Like, yes.
You would find all your bands and see what you wanted to do. And I saw comedy clubs.
And open mic.
And if you brought three friends to sit in the audience and pay for the drinks, you got to go on stage for 5 minutes. And I remember making the call, and they gave me the date, and I hung it up, and yeah, it was definitely in my head. And then I went there, and it was this guy Gary was on stage hosting, and the late great Greg Giraldo was waiting to go on.
Wow.
And we're the only ones. And he was just young and sweaty.
He was starting out as well.
He was starting out as well. He had been doing it for like, I don't know, 5, 6 months.
I must be getting old because for some reason that doesn't sound like that long ago.
It doesn't. I know.
It doesn't really sound like that long ago.
I know. And I just celebrated my 25th anniversary of doing stand-up.
Oh, wow.
June 12th, 2018. I was on Colbert, and I just happened to be on June 12th, the same date, and I went and did the show, and Gregory Giraldo, Greg's son, was there.
Oh, that's nice.
Came into the audience, and yeah, just by coincidence. So that was kind of like I took it as a sign.
Were you scared the first time you performed?
Yeah, but I was pretty confident at the same time. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. It was terrifying. It's like jumping from a plane, but I was funny forever, so I was like, all right, I think I'll get through this. I can do it, you know? It came from that kind of, I wasn't a very insecure kid. I was like, I can do this. And then you kind of do it.
Do you still get, what kind of feelings do you have as you get on stage now, whether it's at a club or on a, you know, late night show?
It depends. It depends on, you know, your mood changes. Not even day to day, it's almost like hour to hour, right?
Yep.
Where you're like, one minute you're like confident, filled with energy, and then literally walk down the hall and you're like, I'm a piece of garbage. I'm exhausted, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
I'm so sad. So it depends. The cool thing about doing it for so long is that I used to think that you had to be up and ready to go and I could go do the show. And now I realize whatever I am at that moment is okay. I could be melancholy, I could be excited and roaring to go. I can bring both to the stage and it'll work. It's just me. Where before I thought I had to manufacture some kind of energy. The show will take care of itself, basically. I've got jokes, I have an audience, we're gonna feed off of each other. Not that I'm gonna walk out there and look dour, but inside I might feel that way. But it doesn't really matter. My mood doesn't matter. I can do the job.
Now, from an entrepreneurial standpoint, it seems that, you know, every stand-up comedian to some degree is an entrepreneur in that there's more to it than just going on stage and telling jokes. All of the periphery, you know, I guess especially when you're starting out, you're booking your own shows, you're organizing your own tours, you're doing your own publicity. Were those aspects of the career things that you took to, or that were more of a hassle, things you needed to get through in order to get your stage time?
It's a hassle. It's still a hassle. There's still a lot of work you have to do every day. I have a corporation, and I run it, and there's no one else there.
Yeah.
I have agents, and I've got, you know, publicists and managers and all these people, but, you know, they're only there for phone calls for, you know, big things and big moments and that kind of thing. Day to day, it's the same as when I started out. It's like, you really have to be self-motivated. You have to get up and realize there's a lot of calls to be made. There's a lot of stuff, you know, nothing happens. I always thought I'd get to a point where I would get to a point and these agents and managers would just call you up on the phone and I've got an opportunity for you. And
yeah.
Hey, this guy really wants to see you. It doesn't happen. You have to gin it up all the time. It's totally up to you. And it was the same in the beginning. And I think you need a work ethic to some degree. You know, I know a lot of really funny guys, really seriously funny people who don't have the real ability to like call up on the phone and accept and not accept no, you know, and keep going. Like they're more artistic. They lack that sense. Like it's like you couldn't see them surviving in an office,
right?
To any degree. And they don't go as far. Like, you know, it's heartbreaking because I know a couple of my really good friends, super, super funny, and they're always kind of almost getting it going. But I know that they have, like, making a call to somebody and asking for something or is just like a nightmare to them.
Do you think that there is some tie sometimes between the kind of sense of humor that someone like that might have and a sort of inability to self-market or to do that kind of thing? Like, that's part of who they are, and so there's an authenticity there, but then...
Yeah, completely. It's not, they can't fake it, you know? There's more guys that are good at business that can fake being a comedian.
Uh-huh.
There's not many people... There are no people who are pure comedian without any business and can fake that part of it.
You can't fake it.
Can't, no. They're different creatures. You almost, like, whenever I see them, I'm like, how do they get home? How do they... How do they buy food? They're so off the wall, but they're so funny.
Right.
They usually have to find someone else in their life that will motivate them and push them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I was always just, you know, taught. I didn't come from, there was nobody in entertainment in my life. Everybody just worked. So I always had that sense that, okay, I've got to work at this. If I'm going to do it, if I'm going to go in a profession that rewards you for acting like a teenager for your whole life, I have to realize that I have to have a split personality, and I have to play the grown-up,
right,
that makes you clean up your room at the same time.
Did you have day jobs as you were starting out?
Just a little bit. I worked in a small advertising agency for like a minute, but it was all just, you know, just to pay the rent until comedy equaled out.
Right.
And as soon as it got close, I just jumped.
You just made the jump.
Yeah.
Was that hard for you, or that's what you wanted? And so
no,
you
yeah, there was always the idea. It was always the plan. And then as soon as I got close, I got some weird gig for Doer Scotch, where I had to host. They basically put out tables and invited young people and tried to get them hooked on blended whiskey. And I hosted it, and it made enough money. It made the same money that I was going to make working. And I was like, all right, that's it. I'm done.
That's it.
And then you just jump in. And I remember being so excited. I'm like, wow, I'm a comedian now. And I went up to Central Park, and I was like expecting it just to be me and like 10 other comedians. And the park was packed on a Tuesday afternoon. I was like, how do these people, what? How do no one works? I thought everyone else was working and comedians had off. I didn't realize everyone was figuring some way out of the office.
It's like coffee shops too.
Yeah, they're packed. You're like, doesn't anyone work around here?
So you had mentioned the social media being an important part of that transition from or into getting this Food Network show. Is that mostly Instagram that you were doing?
It was Instagram and Twitter, really, both of those. Which are kind of linked up, actually. But the Instagram was a big part of it because people could see the bread. And then I did Joe Rogan's podcast, which is millions of listeners.
Sure.
And then his fans started sending me pictures of their bread and saying I was inspiring them to try. And they were getting back into baking or trying it for the first time. And it just became this community. And which still continues to this day. And the funniest tweet I got recently was someone said, I forgot that you're even a comedian. I just look at you as the bread guy now. People are coming to shows with the bread. But yeah, social media was a big, it wouldn't, there'd be no show if it wasn't for that, yeah.
It was sort of a combination of you making your own bread and then also traveling around and taking pictures of other breads from these bakeries that you go to.
Yeah, this is me in Hawaii with a baguette or, you know.
Yeah.
And it really was just to celebrate bread. I just really love it. And I really do think it's a metaphor for enjoying your life. I really do, you know, food's always been an important part of my life. And I come from an Italian family, and there's no celebration that is not centered around food. It just doesn't. Why get to? What else are you gonna do when you get together?
Talk?
No. Yeah, just talk.
Yeah.
No, you're gonna eat and talk, and that's love, and that's excitement, sure. And sharing, and so I just naturally. I mean, even before bread, I was talking about food in different regards on social media and stuff, and then the bread part of it kind of took off. So yeah, when I'm on the road and I see something or see a bakery or you know, there's like all these signs up against bread, or I just took a picture of. In L.A., someone actually had a license plate that said low carb. And I was like, boo, oh. Boo. So I posted that and let my bread fans go nuts on them.
Do you find that even when you're not, you know, shooting your show, when you would go talk to bakers or ask them for their advice or whatever, that they wanted to talk about it? Or
Sometimes they're working. It's a lot easier if they know that you have a show or that you're if they know me as a comic. To, you know, it's always, there's been a couple times where it's been weird where everyone's leaving and I'm just lurking around, like staring at their their flour. Like, what's this guy up to?
What do you prefer, sweet or savory bread?
Savory.
Savory?
Yeah.
What's your favorite baked good that you've had, either that you've made yourself or that you've had somewhere, or something really special that you would say, you know what, if you're ever in this area, you should try this?
During the run of the show, we've shot 8 episodes of it so far, and there were these Amish sticky buns in Philadelphia that it was in the terminal market.
Yes.
And this Amish family makes these hot sticky buns, and it was cold. It was like wintry, and you walk into this market and they give you this homemade hot sticky buns with a coffee on the side. I was like, that to me, like when people do something really simple but just do it really well, I always love that. And that you can eat the manifestation of that was just joy. That was one of the most special things. And one of the things I never even heard of, which is here in New York on the Lower East Side, I forget the name of her place, but it's a woman from the country Georgia, and she makes khachapuri, which is almost looks like a dough boat, a baked dough boat. It looks like a canoe. Filled inside of it is cheese, butter, and egg. It is, and then you pick pieces of the boat off and dip it in the middle and eat it. Holy cow. I'd never heard of khachapuri. I had no idea what it was, and I think about it now. Daily.
I've actually heard that Georgian cuisine is exquisite. I have Georgian food before, but, you know, maybe, you know, I don't think they're a ton, at least in Manhattan, maybe in Brooklyn.
You go out for Italian food, and there's not a lot. We're going out for Georgian food. It's smaller. but man, she's on the Lower East Side. If you just look up, I mean, there's so few. If you look up Lower
Sounds
East Side,
delicious.
Khachapuri, even Food Network, it'll lead you to her. Amazing. She's so filled with life and joy, and she makes this amazing thing, and I'm going to go there on my way out of here.
So this must have been a great journey for you to, you know, transition into combining your love of comedy and your love of baking into what you've done.
It's kind of, and now we're talking about my second book, whether my second book is going to be about that. I think we'll have a book out of bread. I think on SiriusXM, I have this radio show where I sit down with people and we want to do like a spin-off thing where I'm interviewing people and breaking bread with Tom, and using that metaphor that we're speaking of as a way to like sit with funny, talented people. I'm at a point now where I feel like everything should always feed off of each other. Not as a brand, but just as what I like to do and what people know me for. Maybe that is a brand. But it comes from the place of, I'm funny, I love baking bread, and I love writing. So those things always have to be in the mix. Like, I'm at a point now where if you were to tell me, you know, you can be in the sitcom playing this dad of this kid, and you're not Tom Papa, and you're just going to be, you know, working, I don't know if I would do it. Mm-hmm. That doesn't fit the model of being me, being myself, and
being
doing
authentic.
And being who I am, and letting people, and having it feed off of each other. All these things feed, you know, off of each other, and hopefully more people come and see me do stand up live. That's the main thing.
So where would folks know where you're going to be performing? What's the best way?
If they go to tompapa.com. And all my tour dates are up there. And we did a horrible thing where we put a map of the United States up with all the dots of where I'm going to be. Mm-hmm. And it's terrible. Seeing the physical manifestation of this horrible travel plan, I used to just think, okay, where am I Thursday? Where am I Saturday? And just go like that. Now I can see, like, I've got to go to all of those. It doesn't seem physically possible, but it's handy for you as a fan.
Sure.
But for me, I don't like looking at it.
And so your last book just came out earlier this summer, right?
Your
Dad Stole My Rake?
Your Dad Stole My Rake and Other Family Dilemmas.
So that's kind of reminiscing. How would you describe?
It's about my family and your family and everyone listening's family. I feel like as a comedian, comedy, family has always been the basis of my comedy. I always see it through that lens. And I decided there was more to say, and I'm going to break it down. It's my job to relate it to you. You're busy. You're working. Here are some things you might not have noticed about your mom, your dog, your cats, aunts, uncles, children. So I wrote a whole series of essays on everyone in your life. And, yeah, it came out pretty well. We're in our third printing, I think.
That's great.
Yeah, it's pretty great.
And so for now, your next book, though, there'd be a different direction you're thinking.
Yeah, well, I want to do another. I do like writing those essay kind of things. So I want to do another one like that. I want to do something about... I want to do another one of those, but then there's also this bread divergent. I don't know. Maybe I'll do both at the same time. I'm not sure. But yeah, I got to kind of figure it out.
Well, I guess with Live From Here, you sort of can scratch that itch to some degree, right? Because
yeah,
a lot of the stories that are told there have that kind of homespun sort of
it's
feeling.
It's, again, like when I said, you know, it's cross-pollinating in a way. It's like my segment on Live From Here every week is called Out in America, and it's shining a light on all the good people I see in my travels, because I really feel like we're taught that, or told now, that we're all at each other's throats. Mm-hmm. Well, they are on the news.
Sure.
But every day, you know, you walk in here, you get in the elevator, you're sitting there with your coffee and bagel, you see someone else. No idea what that person is politically, but you smile at each other, hold the door open for each other. People, it's a lot more hopeful when I travel than it is the interpretation on television. So I wanted to kind of tell those stories of just the people that I run into. And during my travels. So it is similar. It's similar to how I write my books. It's similar to how I do my stand-up. I'm delivering it in a way that I kind of, like I'm doing stand-up every week on the show. And again, that's something that when I took the job as the head writer of this iconic show, it was like, okay, that's very tempting, but does it fit? Does it? And it fit. That one fits perfectly, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for coming to talk to us.
Sure. Thanks for having me in. I appreciate it.
And now I really want some Georgian baked goods.
Khachapuri, baby.
I'm going to head down there right after work. I'll brave the rain.
Yeah. The hardest part of the one bummer about this bread gig is when you start to get known for it is that every time you go someplace, they're like, you didn't bring me bread. Like I'm supposed to. Maybe that'll be the next chapter. I'll have to have like a bread business.
That's true, yeah. It all fits in, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Cool. Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
That's our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. How Success Happens comes out every week. To catch each episode, please subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. Like, share, and leave us a review so we can always be improving. Go to entrepreneur.com for more episodes of this show and our other great podcasts. That's entrepreneur.com. Thanks.